Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Yes, the rhythm, the rebel. Without a pause, I'm lowering my level. The hard rhyme, where you never been, I'm in. You want styling? You know it's time again. D, the enemy, telling you to hear it. They praise the music, it's time to play the lyrics. Some say no to the album, the show. Bum rush the sound I made a year ago. I guess you know, you guess I'm just...
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. On today's show, a look at the hip-hop canon. Why, how, and most important, who will be in it? Later on the show, Andy Palacio explains Caribbean Garifuna culture and performs with his Garifuna Collective. But first, Beethoven's Fifth, Miles Davis's Kind of Blue, and the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper are all considered pinnacles of their respective canons. And with hip-hop approaching its fourth decade, is it time to get its own canon? And if so, what should it include? We'll hear from a couple of guests, and we'll be taking your calls on suggestions for the hip-hop canon. You can also leave suggestions at the Soundcheck comments page at WNYC.org. But there are some suggestions in the new book called Check the Technique, and its author, Brian Coleman, joins us now. Brian, we began with Public Enemy's album, It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. You call it, quote, the best and most influential rap platter ever made, unquote. Why?
Why? First of all, it's great to be on the show. Hello to everyone. Why? I think that, at least in my own experience, both as a fan and in different people that I've talked to over the years, in my opinion, that is the, you know, possibly a baseline where we can start, pun intended and not intended, in discussing at least where to kind of rank influence and popularity, and kind of how you know, hip-hop as an a music form that makes albums versus just singles, which is why that Public Enemy album was very important. You know, but generally, if you mention that album to just about anyone who knows anything about hip-hop and even rock, I think it's fairly safe to say that they will agree that is a pretty much universally revered classic. So that's at least a good place to start.
All right, so that's 1988. I mean, hip-hop had been around for a good time before that, but this, you're saying, was the first album to really suggest that hip-hop could sustain a certain level of achievement over the course of a whole record.
I'm not sure about that. I think Chuck D himself would say that Run DMC, Raising Hell, which is also in the book, is one that he would probably argue, and I would agree with him, was one that started to really kind of explore the album all the way through. Even talking to DMC from Run DMC, he even admits in the book that he doesn't feel that their first two albums were even that good. He'll go that far to say it was a lot of filler and things like that. So,
As you said, I mean, you know, you said one of the great things about this Public Enemy record was that, you know, it wasn't just a single, and it seemed like there were a lot of singles very early on. But if you're going to put a canon together, are you making those sorts of distinctions?
I'm not sure that it's really my right to put a canon together.
I'm not saying you personally, you, Brian Coleman, but,
yeah.
You know, if people are doing this, I guess that's a bigger question, isn't it? Who is doing it and how is it being done?
Well, exactly. I guess there's two distinctions to make. First of all, you know, hip-hop artists, you know, or any genre's artists, so the Sugar Hill Gang, did they ever make a great album? No, they did not. Were they incredibly influential? Yes, that's absolutely undebatable. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I think there's that distinction to be made, and that hip-hop was not looked at as a music that made a musical form that really was that had its head completely around making full albums as art, as, you know, the Beatles and some of their epic records. That started to kind of come through, I believe, in the mid-80s onwards, and it certainly really got a lot of steam with It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. That's not to say that was the end-all, be-all. It was really just the beginning. But
okay. Fair enough. Brian Coleman's speaking with us. His book is called Check the Technique. And it is, it says on the cover, the stories behind 36 immortal rap albums. So is this book, I mean, are you saying that these are 36 albums that should be within the hip-hop canon, or these are 36 records that happen to have great stories? What are we talking about here?
I would say that these are 36 albums, you know, in simplest terms, these are 36 albums that I personally love, and they are 36 albums that never really had any kind of substantial liner notes, and so my method is what I call invisible liner notes. It's creating liner notes for albums that never had them. I think it's the beginning of a discussion about a canon, possibly, but you know, I personally would rather hear what the public has to say than what critics have to say about that, or at least to combine them. I think it would be a mistake not to include. You know, different. There are many different viewpoints. My book is, I grew up on the East Coast, so it's very skewed, at least this volume, and I'm just beginning, towards the East Coast. But that does not mean in any way that L.A. and Atlanta and Houston have not made, you know, their own albums that certainly could be considered into a canon. So,
let me just ask, you got 36 records. Where are the women?
Yes, exactly. Well, let me just say that it was not for lack of trying. I very much wanted to have Queen Latifah in there. I very much wanted to have Salt and Peppa in there. I even reached out to Yo-Yo. A lot of this was, at a certain point, I had to stop and kind of, you know, hit enter and kind of go on. I mean, it's a glaring error. MC Light is in there, who is hugely important as well. But I personally, believe me, it was not an omission that was on purpose whatsoever. I very much would have liked to have seen, especially Queen Latifah and Salt and Peppa in there.
So
as much as anyone else.
It's based on people that you were actually, to do these liner notes for albums that didn't originally have them, you wanted to speak to all these people, and just couldn't get to Queen Latifah.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, there's no Tupac chapter either.
Right.
So it's certainly not a thing I did on purpose, for
right.
sure.
Well, All Hail the Queen, 1989, here is a little bit from Queen Latifah.
Stereotypes, they got to go. I'ma mess around and flip the scene into reverse.
With what?
With a little touch of ladies first.
Queen Latifah, Ladies First, from her 1989 album All Hail the Queen, and we are talking about a prospective canon of great hip-hop recordings, and we've begun by speaking with author Brian Coleman. His book is called Check the Technique and offers 36 ideas for great records that might be in that canon. And we'll be taking your calls in a little while, and you can also leave your comments on the Soundcheck page at our website, wnyc.org. But we're also being joined by Mark Anthony Neal, Associate Professor of Black Culture at Duke University. Mark, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Oh, it's great to be back on.
So if there is to be a canon of great hip-hop recordings, what purpose does something like that serve?
You know, I think in and of itself, it doesn't serve any purpose. It almost comes off as being a little elitist. But I think at this point, you know, as hip-hop really is making a move towards the mainstream, in the sense that, you know, very often you have network news anchors who have to try to talk thoughtfully about hip hop, you know, as it's being now offered, you know, in hundreds of classrooms, you know, at universities and colleges. And you have a younger generation of folks who are consuming hip hop and popular music in general, but really don't have a greater sense of the historical trajectory of the form. I think, you know, the idea of being able to put out, in the case of Brian's book, you know, 36 critical albums or 50 albums and with some background on the artist, it's very useful for people to get a handle on what exactly this has been since 1973.
Right. So the fact that it has become such a pervasive part of our culture in general, not just the music, but, you know, everything from fashion to art and design, I mean, the influence of hip-hop is enormous.
Absolutely. You know, I thought it was really interesting that, you know, when Flavor Love became so popular, you know, these past 2 years, that many of my students, for instance, had no idea of his role in Public Enemy.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you're putting a canon together, it does suggest that this material is somehow classic, and that in turn suggests that it's been around for a while, you know, that it's been able to stand the test of time. Does that mean, I mean, you know, if we're looking back to the early rap of the 70s, hip-hop of the 80s, I mean, how relevant are these albums to kids today?
They aren't very, I mean, particularly on the production style. I mean, young folks now have been introduced to, you know, production techniques that have been framed by the technology of this particular moment. And the early stuff simply doesn't sound that good. You know, I can't say it doesn't sound that good, but it doesn't sound like the music that they're hearing today. Even if in some sense, you know, the lyrics, you know, may resonate with them in a certain kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, I take, you know, some of my advice, you know, from folks who do jazz studies, from jazz artists, and they often talk about, you know, something they refer to as a common practice period. You know, what period can you look at jazz and really hear all the elements of what makes jazz great, you know, in this particular period? And I think if you look at hip-hop through the guise of a common practice period, which in my mind would be from like 1987 to 1992, you know, you do get a broader perspective of different styles of hip-hop, both in terms of content and also in terms of style and production style. You get some, you know, obviously West Coast and East Coast. You get some of the conscious stuff. You get some of the gangster rap, et cetera, et cetera, as a way to talk about, if you listen to the music in this period, I mean, you hear everything that represents the best of what this is.
So that's kind of the golden age, the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, you know, I hesitate to describe it that way because it's such a subjective view of what it is. I mean, for someone like myself, you know, I'm 41 years old, to some extent it was a golden age. But I think for, you know, younger folks who are also fans of hip-hop who may be in their late 20s and 30s, you know, you'd be hard-pressed not to look at, say, 1992 to 1997.
Yeah. Although you could look at those years and you could see people pulling stuff from the earlier years. I mean, we can hear a little bit of Slick Rick, you know, Children's Story, The Great Adventures of...
Right, yeah, absolutely. Right.
Great Adventures of Slick Rick 1988 has been, it's one of the most sampled hip-hop albums ever.
Pajamas and live life slow. Where laws were stern and justice stood, and people were behaving like they ought to good. There lived a little boy who was misled by another little boy, and this is what he said. Me and you tonight, we're gonna make some cash, robbing old folks and making the dash. They did the job, money came with ease, but one couldn't stop, it's like he had a disease. He robbed another
Stick
and another,
Stick
and a sister and a brother. Tried to rob a man who was a DT undercover. The cop grabbed his arm, he started acting erratic. He said,
keep still, boy, no need for static.
Punched him in his belly and he gave him a slap. But little did he know, the little boy was strapped. The kid pulled out a gun, he said,
why'd you hit me?
The barrel was set straight for the cop's kidney. The cop got scared, the kid, he starts to figure,
I'll do years if I pull this trigger.
So he cold dashed and ran around a block. Cop radios into another lady cop. He ran by a tree, there he saw the sister. Shot for the head, he shot back, but he missed her. Looked around good and
from the Great Adventures of Slick Rick, that's Children's Story, and Slick Rick's lyrics used by numerous rappers in many ways since that time. We're looking at what a possible canon for hip-hop might mean. Brian Coleman's with us, the author of the new book Check the Technique, Liner Notes for Hip-Hop Junkies is the subtitle, and Mark Anthony Neal, associate professor in the Department of African and African-American Studies at Duke University. And Brian, you heard Mark talking about the, you know, this kind of common practice era in the late 80s, early 90s. Would you agree? What was so special about those years?
I think what was special about those years was, and it happens it does not happen as often today as it should, is that, and I've said this before in discussions, back then the goal, in my opinion, if you were an MC, was still to be the greatest MC out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not convinced that a lot of the kids coming up today that's their main goal. Some of them it certainly is, but there's also it was not the kind of thing where you could you had huge dreams of getting rich when you were putting out a hip hop album in 1987. I think nowadays it's seen as I could be the most paid MC, you know, and I see that as certainly a difference, in that you could experiment back then and not really worry about, is my label going to drop me? Because everything was still forming, you know, it was all still coming together, and people were trying new things, and some things were working and some things weren't. So I think at least creatively, and also a lot of times things that were creatively excellent, like, say, De La Soul, 3 Feet High and Rising, Public Enemy, they were also selling very well, mm-hmm. you know, at the same time. Whereas now some of the more creative artists are really not selling as much as, you know, some of the ones who are more popular, the ones that...
Got a whole underground now, a hip-hop underground of people
yeah,
like Mr.
And
Lift.
Those artists, they still make a living, and they're still making great records, and... You know, I still point to, you know, like, say, an artist like Madlib, who's, you know, mm-hmm. not exactly on MTV all the time, but he's still making amazing music on a label like Stone's Throw and making a living doing it. But, yeah, I agree with Mark. Certainly, there back then, whatever you want to call it, Golden Age, or even up through the mid-90s, there was a time where you could really try anything and see what worked.
And in that period of time, you had Eric B. and Rakim recording this song, Eric B. is President. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll return with more from Brian and Mark. And having discussed what a hip-hop canon means, we'll start to talk about what albums belong in it and what albums don't belong. Should there be a canon at all? You can call us and give us your opinion. The number is 212-264-7483, 212-264-7483. And then coming up later on the show, Andy Palacio and his band bring Caribbean Garifuna music to the Soundcheck studio for a live performance.
New York, New York, big city of dreams. And everything in New York ain't always what it seems. You might get fooled if you come from out of town, but I'm down by law and I know my way around. Too much, too many people, too much.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Earlier this year, these guys, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and enshrined in rock history. Now, they've always been heralded in hip-hop and are a vital part of any hip-hop canon. We are talking about what that hip-hop canon might be with Brian Coleman, author of Check the Technique, and with Mark Anthony Neal, associate professor of black culture at Duke University, and with our Soundcheck listeners at 212-264-7483. You can also leave your comments online at WNYC.org. The number again, 212-264-7483. If there is to be a hip-hop canon, what should be in it? Mark, as I mentioned, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has just granted entry to Grandmaster Flash and his crew. He would seem to be an obvious member of the hip-hop canon. What about other, you know, early rappers who had an association with rock music, like Afrika Bambaataa?
I think absolutely. I mean, again, these aren't artists who were necessarily album-driven. I mean, they were making basically hot singles, but I don't think you can talk about any great music from that early period that doesn't include, you know, some of the really groundbreaking stuff that the Afrika Bambaataa was doing with the technology at the time.
Mm-hmm. Now, Brian, VH1 has this hip-hop honors. It's kind of a, you know, rock and roll hall type of thing that they started in 2004. It took them a couple of shows, but they eventually did induct Afrika Bambaataa. Have they gotten it right so far, would you say?
I think it's a really interesting program that's going on. I would assume that they would agree that it's an ongoing thing. I mean, I can't say I enjoy everything about that, but I like the fact, you know, that they did put someone like Bambaataa in there, and there is an interesting range.
I think we're having a little trouble with your line there, Brian. You know what? Let's hear a little bit of music from the aforementioned Afrika Bambaataa. This was just a ubiquitous and unavoidable song in the early 80s.
We'll be right back.
Planet Rock from Afrika Bambaataa, and that would probably be a nearly unanimous choice for any hip-hop canon, along with Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. And after that, well, even with that, you're into the realm of opinion, and our Soundcheck listeners have some opinions, and they're not afraid to share them. Let's start with Chad in Harlem. Hi, Chad.
How are you?
Do you think there should be a hip-hop canon?
Oh, sure, why not? Celebrate music like that. That's a wonderful thing, too.
Uh-huh.
I got to say, I'm like a white boy from the suburbs, and when I was in college, my favorite album was Run DMC's Tougher Than Leather, and it still is one of my favorites. I think it's very clever, very funny lyrics, it's just a lot of fun to dance to.
Mm-hmm. So what would, that's your suggestion, the Run DMC for the hip-hop canon?
Yeah, I heard something a little earlier on the show. I just tuned in right when somebody was talking about Run DMC's earlier albums, and I don't know if Tougher Than Leather was one of them, and I think it's a wonderful album.
All right. Certainly, I think Run DMC, Mark, would have left behind, through various recordings, enough of a legacy to merit inclusion.
Oh, absolutely. Even though, Tougher Than Leather is an interesting album. I mean, because it was delayed in its making. So, there was a lot of anticipation for the album to come out earlier than it did. But there were some legal issues. And I think when the time that the album finally did hit, it really didn't resonate the way it should have. Because, by that time, things had started to change. And, Public Enemy was now in the world. And De La Soul albums come out that same 1988. So I think, it kind of lost the kind of big bang effect that it could have had if it got out on time.
All right, let's take another call. Ralph joining us from the car. Drive carefully there, Ralph.
I'm going to try my best. Thank you.
Do you think there should be, like an accepted canon like there is in classical music and rock for hip-hop too?
Well, if there is, I think the Sugar Hill Gang should be included. That's basically like saying the invention of the wheel should be left out of the Museum of Natural History.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they started it all. And when hip-hop I grew up in Bronx River. I grew up with Bambaataa. He lived on the first floor. I lived on the third floor. I saw how it all came about. And one of the things that when hip-hop started, it was all about having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the music was fun and the lyrics were fun. And it was about dancing and having a good time. And everybody wanted to be the best. Everybody. But what started to change hip-hop, in my opinion, is when the mogul was introduced, when the Russell Simmons would tell their artists what to rap about in order to sell records, when they started to take the truth out of the lyrics. And that's, I think, it changed the entire direction of hip-hop.
Ralph, when we look back at the Sugar Hill Gang at this song, Rapper's Delight Now, we think it's kind of a, cute, silly thing. You think it would be crazy not to include this
Absolutely.
As part of the canon?
Absolutely. I think because that was what started hip-hop. That was the beginning. That's what started it all. That was the wheel.
Here it is.
I mean,
let's listen to a little bit of Rapper's Delight from the Sugar Hill Gang.
Now what you hear is not a test. I'm rapping to the beat. And me, the groove, and my friends are gonna try to move your feet. You see, I am Wonder Mike, and I like to say hello. Up to the black, to the white, the red, and the brown, and the purple, and yellow. But first, I gotta bang, bang, the boogie to the boogie. Say up, jump the boogie to the bang, bang, boogie. Let's rock. You don't stop, rock the rhythm, that'll make your body rock. Well, so far, you've heard my voice, but I brought two friends along. And next on the mic is my man Hank. Come on, Hank, sing that song.
Check it out. When I'm imp the dimp, the ladies pimp, the women fight for my delight. But I'm the grand master with the three MCs that shop the house for the young ladies. And when you come inside into the front,
Rapper's Delight from the Sugar Hill Gang, early and important piece of hip hop. We're talking about a prospective canon of hip hop with Brian Coleman, author of the book Check the Technique, and Mark Anthony Neal from Duke University. Brian, we talked a little bit before about how, something going into the canon, it suggests it's withstood the test of time. Are there any current music or any recent records that you think will be considered great enough to be part of the hip-hop canon?
Well, that's my sound back here.
Yeah?
All right. I think it's really difficult to say. I think you really need some breathing room to sit back and kind of take 5-10 years at least and see how it compares, how that artist grows or doesn't grow, how influential that record is. I mean, I would probably say in the last 5 years. I can't think of very many, to be honest. I would probably put Kanye West, College Dropout, in there. It's tough. It's a very different era, and I think, you know, a lot of the artists, and what I notice today that happens is there are way too many producers with their hands on each album. I think that that results in albums not being as good as they are, as they can be. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that's a lot of the artists I cover in the book, pretty much almost all of them, it's usually one producer or one or two in a group that make the music, and it's not, you know, 10 producers spread out, because I'm not sure how you're supposed to get any continuity there going at all.
The too many cooks syndrome. All right, let's take another call from Justin in New Jersey. Hi, Justin.
Hey, how you doing?
What do you think should be in the hip-hop canon?
Well, actually, you just brought up a good point. I was calling because I was curious, you know, current artists or people who have been around for only maybe 5 or 10 years to be put on the list. And sure, De La Soul's Dead should be on there, but What do you think about LP, the guy who's out of New York right now on the Def Jux label? Do you think somebody like him in 5 or 10 years should be recognized as a producer like a Prince Paul back in the day, somebody who really is innovative and doing different things with different tracks?
Brian, you want to handle that?
Personally, yes, definitely. I mean, Company Flow, Funk Crusher Plus was an album that, you know, was in the mix there for me to include. One of the only albums that I would include in the latter part of the 90s, I think that came out in 97. That's purely from an artistic standpoint. As for sales, that did not sell through the roof, and, you know, LP does well now, and he's still a great producer. But I guess the short answer to that is yes, I feel that LP is one of the producers out there who is still making interesting music and certainly has been for several years.
All right, let me Mark Anthony Neal, the caller also mentioned De La Soul. I mean, 3 feet High and Rising wasn't just an album. That was a phenomenon when that first was released.
And, you know, De La Soul doesn't get any credit for its consistency. I mean, because you know, the same way that you can mention De La Soul is Dead, Adored Balloon State of Mind was incredible as a conceptual piece of art. I thought Stakes is High was incredible as a conceptual piece of art. Of course, they didn't sell anywhere near like 3 Foot High and Rising, but they've always been willing to push, you know, the boundaries, mm-hmm. to do something that, you know, really, on the one hand, was incredible artistically, but at the same time reflected some everyday realities, right? I mean, they didn't need to make up stories. They just told stories of the everyday, you know, that resonated for the audience.
Well, let's hear a little bit from De La Soul. The album 3 Feet High and Rising is one of the 36 albums that's included in Brian Coleman's book, Check the Technique. Classic album, 3 Foot High and Rising, that is De La Soul, and we are speaking with both the author, Brian Coleman, the book is Check the Technique, and with Mark Anthony Neal, Associate Professor in the Department of African and African American Studies at Duke University, about the hip-hop canon and what might be in it. Let's take another call from Koran in New Jersey. Hi.
How you doing? Good afternoon to you and all the guests. What I was going to say was, actually, also, he might be thinking about KRS-One Criminal Minded, which was mentioned on Stakes is High as a pivotal album that De La Soul was asking people about on the beginning of the album.
Actually, I think that's in your book, too, Brian, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah. So that's a good one. What do you think about the idea of a canon, though, Koran?
Well, what I was thinking is the canon is a good idea, but I feel like it's probably going to start the whole East Coast, West Coast, and even the southern part of the country, that riff again, because now most people on the East Coast consider the rap that comes from this area as the pinnacle of hip-hop. And obviously the South has, you know, has come and emerged, and a lot of their music is being played in the club, but a lot of people who listen to underground and even diehard East Coast hip-hop fans don't really give that music that much respect because it seems to be too much of the same thing.
Well, that's a really interesting point, and probably a good one to throw out to Mark and Brian, and we'll probably have to leave it here. But Mark, you know, Coran makes a good point. There's almost by necessity going to be a Northeast bias when you start talking about great old hip hop recordings.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm one of those folks with that East Coast bias. But I think that's why it's important to, you know, include like a group like Outkast in the mix, because again, you know, here's a group that's recognizing where they are in the world geographically, but at the same time, you know, can speak enough to what we think of as classic hip-hop form, and at the same time push out the boundaries musically about what's happening in hip-hop at any given time.
Mm-hmm. And Brian, NWA, Straight Outta Compton, that's, you know, that's got to be a classic.
Of course, of course. I mean, in my first book, actually, I had the DOC, No One Can Do It Better, classic and very underrated L.A. record from 1989. Yeah, definitely. Well, I should also point to a great book that also is just out now called Third Coast by Ronnie Sarig that explores a lot of the southern hip-hop. And it's very important. It's very important. I also have the Ghetto Boys in mind. My book, you know, trying to give Houston a little love.
We've actually covered that book on Soundcheck not too long ago. You can check our website for the audio archive of that section on the book Third Coast. But for the moment, we've got Kanye West to play us out and a song called Classic, and who knows? 10, 15 years from now, maybe Kanye West will indeed turn out to be classic and a part of the hip-hop canon. We've been speaking with Brian Coleman. His book is called Check the Technique. Mark Anthony Neal, associate professor in the Department of African and African American Studies at Duke University. Brian, Mark, thanks both of you for being with us today.
Thank you, John.
And thanks to everybody who called in. Still to come, Andy Palacio talks about Garifuna music and culture, which blends native Caribbean and West African traditions. And his band, the Garifuna Collective, performs live in our studio on Soundcheck next. Been a couple of more times. Please, your amateur night. It's showtime. It's one life to live. So live it the best you can. The world could use one less man. Not enough air. Not enough.